they felt able to open up on what had been a fairly traumatic life, to be honest. And we had a long chat about this, and we had a long chat about the synergies of golf and behaviors off the golf course. This client emailed me a couple of days ago to say that they won the medal. You know, they've shot like the best that they've shot for a long time. But this particular client's developed a mantra of stop raking other people's bunkers in life, but also on the golf course.
Hi and welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the community of golfers who are unified in their belief that golf is good for you. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. Join me and invited guests as we share stories around how golf is helping us to live happy, healthy and fulfilled lives. If you would like to join this community, do follow us on your podcast platform of choice. We are available in most places where you would usually get your podcast, so do hit that follow button, which will make sure that you are notified as soon as a new episode drops. Do also check out our back catalogue of written journal articles, written and contributed by myself on a monthly basis over at golfyourselfhealthy.com. Check out the link to that and all other relevant GYH links in the show notes. Now, before I introduce today's guest, I want to offer this thought to you, which ties to that soundbite you just heard right at the beginning of this episode. To many golfers, their idea of success is shooting lower scores without necessarily having explored how or why we were able to enjoy that success. For others, though, success on the golf course comes from identifying issues that we're facing off the golf course. As soon as we get to the root cause of why we feel the way we do and then work on a plan to move beyond that limiting belief, which oftentimes is caused by maybe a traumatic life event, for example, then we can often enjoy unparalleled success, both on and off the golf course. So this week's guest is Laura Scott, a mental performance coach who you just heard from at the start there. Laura helps amateur golfers to build confidence and enhance performance without technical swing changes under the business banner of Coaching for Success. Do check her out in the show notes. Again, links to her and her pages are in the show notes. Laura works with clients both online and in person. She places a particular focus on the mental game, believing that for us amateur golfers in particular, the most impactful and often quickest improvements in our game can come through working on our mental game rather than necessarily the technical side of our game. In chatting to Laura, it was clear to me that her coaching philosophy centres around helping her clients to fulfil not only their potential in golf, but in all areas of their lives. The conversation is a far-reaching one. We cover a lot of topics related to the mental game of golf, including the importance of mindset, self-belief, managing expectations. We also touch on the concept of comparing ourselves to others and the impact that can have on our performance. I know personally that's something that's held me back a lot over the years in my golf, so I took a lot of value from hearing what Laura had to say on that matter. She also shares an interesting anecdote about the power of gratitude and the ability for gratitude to reframe our negative emotions on the golf course by focusing on what we're grateful for. But now, without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Well, Laura, thank you very much for joining the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I like to check in with my guests before we launch into a conversation. So how are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited. I mean, for what it's worth, I absolutely love what you're doing. I love what you're pushing. I think there's a lot of synergies. And yeah, just looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you, Laura. I think the logical place for us to start is what I always like to refer to as the spirit of your game. So this is getting to know Laura on a personal human level, but then also getting to know Laura on a golf-related level. So, you know, in terms of you as a golfer, but before we get into coaching for success and your business-related golf, if you will, if you know what I mean. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, great opening question. where do you start? I mean, I haven't played golf for an amazing amount of time. I picked up golf in 2019. Well, I'd always done sports throughout. I represented my country in a couple of events, injury plagued with many team sports growing up. And yeah, I found golf, interestingly enough, because without going too deep too soon, but I literally suffered with severe anxiety for, you know, there on 4 years, panic attacks, things like that. And I thought, right, I need to get out and do something. And then golf was there. So yeah, really interesting how that came about. And from there, really, it was, you know, how good can I get and how quickly? That was always the way I looked at things, always very driven, always performed with things at a decent level. And that worked for a little while. And then that absolutely didn't work with golf. And it was like, okay, I am bordering on hating this sport now. What on earth is this? And so that's when I really sort of started studying the mental game, and it's transformed my golf. And, you know, dare I say it, off the back of that, it has transformed the way I look at life and my perspective on things.
Mm. There's no such thing as too deep too soon on this podcast, Laura, because if you've listened to it before, you'll know that I say this is where deep and meaningful conversations are par for the course. And I think I thank you for sharing that, only because I'm just glad that you and other guests seem to feel safe to come here and share that stuff. And just, I mean, in what you shared there as well, it sounds like naturally through what you've experienced in your early beginnings and experiences with golf and other sports is, I'm sure you'll have naturally built up resilience from experiencing injury. If we can touch on that just for a brief moment, because, you know, in the time that I've been doing this, I've met people on the GYH journey or already have friends who are keen golfers or keen sports people or both, right? An injury has set them back because, dare I say it, I think I'm entitled to say this at the age of 38. I mean, I'm not exactly old, but I'm no spring chicken either. But I think injuries do, you know, I had some issues with my back not all that long ago. And it's when you experience injury, it can be very debilitating and mentally so as well. So, I mean, is that how you reflect on it? Do you think like you've built up some resilience with that in the past? And also, I guess, with your experiences with anxiety too?
Mm. Yeah, well, I always joke that I'm a walking piece of glass, to be honest. that's what my coaches used to tell me. Yeah, for me, it was a young age. I mean, I performed at a pretty good standard in football, and women's football wasn't quite where it is now. And there's a part of me that, you know, I sometimes find it hard to watch the football because you know, we didn't quite have the opportunities that are there now. But ultimately, we were the people that probably paved the way to be where women's football is now. But yeah, that was my life, literally to my life. And I was 16 when I tore my first cruciate ligament, my ACL. And I also did athletics at the time. So I was one of the top in the UK for javelin, which is probably why I should be driving the ball a little bit further than I am. So it was kind of twofold. And at 16, you know, sport is life. And I mean, a cruciate injury, you're looking at 7 to 9 months of rehabilitation. It's with major surgery. So that was the first setback. And that was really, I learned a lot. I'd managed to bounce back with rehabilitation, had the surgery in 5 months. And that year, I think it was that year, I was third in the international event for javelin. So I came third for England, which was great. But it was an interesting journey, definitely. And the resilience there, the problem with that is when I did the same injury on the other knee two years later, and that scuppered the football, I must admit. And again, I think that bounce back ability that you get from injuries is phenomenal, but it is a hard place to be when you're in it. And exactly the same in terms of mental health. my anxiety started, interestingly, because I know you've talked about it on in various different guises through the podcast, but I lost my dad and I didn't deal with it. I went straight back to work, to the point, and I mean, this isn't a funny story per se, but when you think back to it, it probably is. I didn't deal with it at all. And when it was my dad's funeral, it was a burial. And it only hit me when I went to put a flower into the grave. It hit me and my legs buckled. And if my brother hadn't caught me, I would have fallen into the grave because that moment, it sort of got me. And ultimately, you know, 4 years of sort of avoidance and dealing with that kind of stuff. But absolutely, I mean, now, and this is, again, without jumping too far ahead, this is why I do what I do, because there is so much of golf and the lessons in golf in terms of the mental game that can be applicable to anxiety and other forms of mental health. It's unbelievable. And I'd go so far as to say what I've learned in golf, I've actually translated into life rather than the other way around.
Let's unpack this a bit more then, right? So can we unpack firstly a bit more about this golf is good for you? Because what you're saying here now is the case. It sounds like that has been and is and continues to be the case for you. So, you know, whether it's anxiety or whether it's in life more generally, that how for you personally is golf helping you with some of life's challenges?
Golf is one of those games that keeps you honest in every way you want to, you know, interpret that. But you have to be in the present with golf in order to put a good golf performance in. And that, for me, on the one fold, takes me away from anything and everything that's going on outside of golf. You know, it's that 4-5 hours sometimes of I'm going to say peace. It doesn't always feel like peace. When you're putting provisional balls down, it doesn't feel like peace. But it is just being in that present moment, not thinking about what was, not thinking about what's to come, you know, the sort of traits of depression and anxiety. Focusing on what you can control, you know, accepting what you can't control. Striving to do your best, but again, on those things that you can control. So yeah, I'll probably summarize as that.
Yeah, yeah. I think we will, I'm sure that we'll naturally unpack this even more as we start talking about, and maybe now is probably a good time to go into talking about coaching for success, which before we go any further, so coaching for FORE success, love it. You know, I just, golf, wordplay and golf, some of my favorite things in life. And I just, yeah, I love what you're doing and I'd like my listeners to understand more about it. So coaching for success, and Laura, do you want to say more about what it is and why you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I founded Coaching for Success at literally the beginning of last year, so early 2023. What Coaching for Success is ultimately, it's a platform to help amateur golfers play better golf, play better, more enjoyable golf, should I say, without changing their swing. So a lot of what I do is around the mental game, okay, and it is around things that we've already discussed, okay, but very specific to golf, okay. There is a channel that I also do golf fitness because, you know, I'm a trained personal trainer as well. With the amount of injuries that I've had, I thought it was fairly important to include that. So it's kind of a twofold of the body and the mind for golf without changing that swing. And ultimately, yeah, it's kicked off fairly well. It's kicked off quickly. The breakthroughs that clients are having are usually at least dropping sort of 3 to 4 shots in the space of 12 weeks. Okay. And I think what ultimately I'm trying to get the message out there is that as amateurs, we are so eager to spend £500 on the next new driver or, you know, go for the odd lesson to get the quick fixes. And absolutely, look, there's a place for them. But the fundamentals of how you're thinking or how you're able to move will shape what you can do with that brand new driver or that lesson.
Yeah. And so in, you know, before this podcast recording, you and I have had a couple of conversations now. And in one of the first conversations I had with you was essentially, you know, in terms of what you're doing, it's, you know, what you're offering is something which, I mean, you were just referring to it there, how golfers, a lot of, probably arguably even most golfers, club golfers, amateur golfers, say, will invest their time and money in other things before they'll invest anything in the mental game, for example. And I was saying to you how I believe, and my experience suggests, that at least part of the reason for that is because anything mental and human-centered is woo-woo nonsense, basically. And I'm yet to experience anyone say that. That's me saying that. But do you know where I'm going with this, Laura? So, like, what I guess when you put yourself out there like you are now and you're trying to grow your business, and by all accounts, from things that you've already told me and that you're sharing now, there's traction developing, you're getting clients, it's going in the right direction for sure. But how are you kind of selling yourself to a golfer or to a group or to a golf club? And how do you differentiate yourself? You know, kind of what are your unique selling points versus another, I don't know, a golf coach or a golf psychologist or whoever it may be? How are you selling yourself to make sure that someone gets it and wants to work with you?
Yeah, great question, Chris. It's an interesting one. You say woo-woo there, and that did make me smile. I would probably term it fluffy. So, you know, I don't need that. You know, I think, right, you know, this is the kind of feedback I get from a lot of players, you know, or, you know, you don't want to get in my head, these kind of things. I think a lot of people don't realize that the mental game, it's practical. Okay, so your tempo, you know, if you're speeding up through a round because you're feeling pressure, yeah, that's mental game. If you're not executing a proper pre-shot routine every time you hit the ball, that's mental game. That affects consistency and concentration, which my experience tells me most amateur golfers want more of. So I think in terms of, you know, back to your question of what my USP is, I mean, I'm a qualified PT, I'm an accredited life coach. The amount of golf psychology books I've read, plus the life experience. But ultimately, you know, the way I communicate to people is I find what works for them. As a qualified coach, I genuinely believe that you know yourself best. Okay, I don't know you best. So ultimately, my job as a coach is to ask you the right questions, is to have the knowledge to guide you and to deliver lessons where needed. But the mental game is so unique for all of us that if you come up with your own ideas by being asked powerful questions, you are much more likely to reap the benefits from them and to perform them. So I guess the USP is, you know, I say things, I'm able to communicate for what the person sitting in front of me needs, whether that be junior, whether it be somebody from a certain generation. And I guess that's the USP.
Mm. And you are, so you live in, you're based in Sheffield, right? I think you told me before. And so is it fair to say, did I understand right, that, you know, part of what you do is you deliver some sessions and services in person, more within your local geography, and then you do some online bits as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, of late, the online business has grown quite significantly. I think the beauty of the mental game is that it doesn't need to be done on the golf course. And quite often, you know, our clients have these breakthrough moments and they go on to shoot, you know, the best scores of their life. I'm working with a scratch golfer at the moment that, you know, we had a couple of sessions together and he was struggling to get where he was prior to an injury. And since that last call, the last three rounds, he shot consistently 73s or under, whereby he was shooting early 80s not more than a month ago. So there's these sort of real breakthrough moments of just getting to identify what's going on. The in-person stuff I do, again, is great. It's on course. It can be really practical. I partner with quite a few pros and clubs and deliver workshops, you know, making it interactive, delivering courses in groups, you know, that shared experience that can be so powerful. And this whole business is a journey. What I'm doing is a journey. And while some people will flourish in those group environments and then they'll look for that, there are others that want that one-to-one safety, as you say, you know, that confidentiality to explore themselves a bit further.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you, why specifically golf? Because, you know, you've talked already about all the life experiences you have, the career experiences, the professional qualifications, etc. In theory, I guess you could apply those in lots of different arenas. But why have you chosen golf specifically?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. I mean, I still do some career coaching from my old life, if you like. And that's great. I think I wanted to find a vehicle. I wanted to find a way to facilitate almost an offering to people that can help transform their golf. Yeah, but it will transform their life onwards of that. And there's this conception that a life coach, okay, and I say this from personal experience, because 6 years ago, maybe seven, if somebody had said, oh, you should see a life coach, I'd be like, that sounds a bit fluffy. You know, that sounds, I'm not sure about that. And this is the personal growth I've been on, you know, as well. Whereas, and I'm sure life coaching will become more of a gone-to thing, you know, when the word gets out, but there'll be certain people in life, and I don't want to generalize on gender, that probably won't go looking for a life coach, right? But helping them get their golf better and ultimately possibly shining a light on some areas in their lives that could make them reach higher potentials, whether it be in their career, in their relationship, you know, in their own happiness, in their version of success. Golf just seems such a wonderful way to do that. And as a golfer, you know, what better place to start? If I can resonate golf with what's going on outside of golf, that felt like it fitted to me. And it felt like I could reach an audience that wouldn't necessarily look to do that elsewhere.
Mm. And with that, you know, when you say that you've been building up connections and relationships with PGA pros that work in golf clubs or you know, golf clubs more generally or whatever, like how are they responding to the service that you're selling? You know, given that, like we said, like some may perceive it as fluffy, have they been really kind of like receptive to it, or have they needed some convincing before you get them over the line?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. And I don't think I could generalize that, because for the most part, it's been really supportive. But, you know, not everybody is going to have the same opinion. And I guess it's interesting with golf coaches, and it depends where their expertise lie, because there will be golf coaches out there that have this quite holistic approach. So they may look with their clients on all three areas. For me, it seems difficult not to niche on it. So there are golf coaches out there that I think if sometimes they're trying to do it all, they will have a certain part that they lean into. You know, and I mentioned in terms of the golf fitness element to coaching for success, it is absolutely something that's there and something I do, but I absolutely lean more into the mental game. I think because I think it can have more of an impact on scoring, arguably, than the golf fitness. Just from my own experience of working with the clients that I have. That's not to say they shouldn't be done together. I wholeheartedly agree on that. But generally speaking, pros are interested. I do work with pros for their own game as well, albeit I don't, it's not the level I'm going after by any stretch or marketing towards. But most pros, when I speak to them, they know that the mental game plays a huge role in golf. And I think they also probably understand that there's a misconception that it's only elite amateurs or professionals that should seek help with their mental game. Whereas actually, yeah, I totally agree in terms of the stakes and the pressure that those players are performing under, they should, but there are always going to be such fine margins when they look at the mental game, right? Whereas an amateur, you know, let's just say a 20 handicapper could look at their mental game, and I'm utterly confident that they could shave 4 shots off their handicap by just implementing 4 or 5 really impactful things. Again, speaking from experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's imagine for a second, I pitch up, I say, oh, coaching for success. Oh yeah, I could benefit from that. So if I come to you, Laura, and say, I'd like to have a coaching session or whatever, talk me through what like an introductory session would look like if you're meeting a client for the first time.
Yeah, sure. I think it's just, it's basic questions of, you know, why are you here? You know, why are you here now? You know, what's brought you here right now? What do you want? And then ultimately it's having a conversation about how we could get you there. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, it's got to be right on both counts. I think after that, then it's really it's conversation and putting a plan in place.
Because part of the reason I'm asking this question is because I'm wondering, and again, reflecting on some of the things that you've said in this conversation already, whether when you're working with your clients, are you working on the human being to make them a better golfer? Or are you working on the golfer, which in turn will help them be... And when I say a better human being, I'm not sort of, you know, that sounds quite hugely philosophical and maybe overly overburdening or powerful, but I hope you know what I mean. It's kind of, you know, are you, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Totally.
How do you see that dynamic working? Human first, then the golfer, or the golfer first, then the human?
It's a really interesting concept, and there are other coaches out there that will talk in that way, you know, human first, golf second. Arguably, I think it's all in one. And I think it's hard. I don't like to map out how I would go about every single client, because every single client will be different. If there's an individual that comes to me with strong beliefs about themselves, strong beliefs about their game, you know, a level of confidence, but there's maybe a few skills or practical tools that they're not implementing, then in that situation, moreover, probably the golf comes first. If there's a client that comes to me that, you know, on the first session, we start talking about how, you know, their people-pleasing tendencies have derived from never feeling good enough or always comparing themselves to other, or I pick up these really limiting beliefs in the first session, then... Yeah, arguably in that scenario, human element first, because that will always translate. So it's a great question, because they literally both go hand in hand, and it depends who's sat in front of me at the time and what that player needs.
Yeah, you know, I think part of the reason I'm so curious about this particular one is because a couple of things that I've learned or realized in the time that I've been doing GYH is, like, I mean, if you take me, for example, like when I turn up to my golf coach these days, who is a traditional golf coach, he's teaching me my swing and my, you know, my technical side. But, you know, interestingly, there is a mental side to what he's teaching as well, which isn't almost explicit, if you know what I mean. But it's kind of, he's just a great golf coach, right? So he's, but what he... whether he allows me to do it or I just do it and go in and be like, yeah, you know, lost my son last year, or oh, we're pregnant again, or like I share all this stuff. And it also makes me think about then how, going right back to the beginning of GYH, when I recorded the episode 2 of this podcast, the Ben, who's a regular contributor to this, him and I played at Royal Norwich Golf Club, and we booked a tea time and we just got paired up with another random guy who came out with us, who's a driving instructor. And he was telling us about how he is as much a counselor these days as he is a driving instructor, because he's got young people coming into his car who are have got unresolved trauma or things going on at home, which and I, if you know where I'm going with this, and I almost wonder if, like, are you finding this at all? Like, you know, maybe a client will come to you and they will just naturally share at a very human level, they'll say this or that, where you start to get an insight into who they are as a person because you, Laura, are equipped with not only the golf experience knowledge, but also the life coaching and everything else. Like, are you, do you know what I mean? Are you seeing some of this?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's, you know, I smile because this is what gets me out of bed, you know, seeing clients have breakthroughs, whether it be in golf, whether it be outside of golf. But I mean, I try and give you, this is quite a recent example sprinkled, I suppose, again, you could look at it with a bit of humor. A recent client engaged with the first session, and somebody that basically hadn't played as much as they used to, for whatever reason, just could not score as they used to. And they were comparing themselves to other people scoring, you know, believing they're a better player, not understanding it, you know. And then in this first session, they felt able to open up on what had been a fairly traumatic life, to be honest. And the best way I can probably describe it is just having been walked all over for many, many years by you know, partners, by kids to a certain extent. And this person sort of allowing that or accepting that as the normal. And that whole concept translated to the golf. So this player, and this all derived from, you know, this player giving me the example of going out of their way to rake someone else's bunker and then getting annoyed because that person didn't go out of their way to rake their bunker when they were in the bunker. And this was like a big frustration that used to then knock onto a golf and you know, wouldn't play as well. And we, you know, we had a long chat about this, and we had a long chat about the synergies of golf and behaviors off the golf course. And, you know, this client emailed me a couple of days ago to say that they won the medal. You know, they've shot like the best that they've shot for a long time. But this particular client's developed a mantra of stop raking other people's bunkers in life, but also on the golf course. You know, so, and this is, you know, this client didn't expect to come into the session and have this sort of mini transformation. But, you know, it has given that person a totally different perspective. And their very own developed mantra that did not come from me. And this is, you know, this is where it can be so powerful.
Love that. Not raking other people's bunkers. I'll use that. If we could, I'll give, you know, give credit to your client for that, because that's a really powerful one. Before we move off into the segments that I was talking about, we like inspirational quotes on Golf Yourself Healthy. And some of them are from famous golfers. Some might be from, you know, other public figures. They don't have to be golf explicitly. It doesn't have to be a golfer that's saying it. It could be, you know, someone that said something, like an author or whoever that said something quite emphatic, like even your client just there, that has a kind of have an applicable golf context. And I've got one that is by Arnold Palmer, which is stitched on the inside of one of my favorite golf tops that I have. And his quote is, "Winning isn't everything, but wanting it is." So I wanted to ask you your take on that. What does that mean to you?
Great quote. Great quote. So winning isn't everything.
Wanting it is. Yeah.
I mean, there's some NLP there about the subconscious brain not picking up a negative, which makes the quote even more powerful. But without going onto a tangent there, yeah, I think so. I think it is really powerful. And my take on that is having the belief that you can win, all right, without taking alongside the expectation that you will. That in itself is a bit of a secret to the mental game of golf. You know, believe that you will, but don't particularly expect that you won't, because expectation, you know, as a basic principle, puts pressure. And I do quite a lot on the, you know, the golfer's mindset, if you like, about growth and fixed mindsets and how to minimize the pressure before you even get to the competition. But yeah, I like it. that's my take on it.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about it because of, again, the work that you do and the experience that you have and the psychology of it all and everything. Because I've actually, but long before I had a golf podcast to talk about this with people like you, I used to stare back at that quote whenever I put that golf top on. And I thought, I love that, but I've never actually stopped to pause, you know, and sort of think what it means to me. I think it does mean to me what you describe, but it's almost, yeah, you know, if I can go out on the golf course every single time with a desire to win, and that desire to win can look different in each different golfing scenario that I'm in, I might want to win in relation to lowering my handicap, but that's for me. I want to win that for me. I don't want to win it for other people. You know, I want to win this golf society tournament that I'm going to go on with all my mates in September. But going back to your point about expectation, you can want to win, but you don't necessarily expect to win. And those two things can, I think, coexist alongside each other. You know, you go in with a positive mindset that says, I'd love to go in and win this thing, but if I don't, well, hey, it's the taking part that counts, you know, or something like that. But do you know what I mean? Does that resonate with you, or is that almost contradictory? I don't know.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm massive on beliefs, massive on beliefs. You know, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, then you're right. So that for me is a really powerful, powerful quote. Mm. So if you believe that you can win that tournament, great. You've got more chance of winning that tournament. But ultimately, the expectations aren't on you to win it. I mean, you mentioned about those outcomes there, and I loved the way that you sort of talked about what that version of success in that round could be, you know, what winning was for you, because quite simply, depending on the week of work you've had or anything, your version of success in that round might just be hitting that driver as hard as you can, you know, or it might be using a new club and having some fun with that, you know, and I don't want to go off a tangent on this and start preaching in any way, shape or form, but I think knowing what your version of success is going into a tournament, okay, and then finding a way to do that, whether it be focusing on processes, you know, taking yourself away from the outcome, minimizing the pressure, all of these sort of fantastic tools that you can use, but not going out there with someone else's version of success in mind.
Absolutely. And I love that you do reference a few minutes ago this idea of comparing yourself to other people on the golf course, because that is, yeah, definitely something I can struggle with. Because I wonder what your perspective is on, you know, whether yours individually, Laura, and maybe also on like, well, not on behalf of, but on reflection on some of the clients that you're working with. Because what's your view on when you've got kind of golfers of a certain standard and ability or a certain handicap, for example, playing with others who are maybe better than them on both on paper, but also kind of in reality as well? Because sometimes what I find with that is, like, I go out with a single figure handicapper who's just like, technically, the swing, everything, I can look at that person and go, I am just nowhere near as good as them. And it actually, the minute that I buy into that mindset, I've set myself back before I even hit the first shot in the first tee box. You know, so I think actually now that I'm even talking about this is like, I feel like I should be able to play golf with people of a better standard than me, provided that my mental processes are right, rather than actually avoidance of playing with people of that standard in the first place. Do you have a perspective on that?
I mean, without trying to flip it too much, what are you thinking in that situation that you're in?
Well, he outdrives it. He outdrives me every single time, and that annoys me. I'm like, oh, I know, like I could rip this drive and I'm still going to be 30 yards shorter than he is. So instantly, I mean, this is maybe a bit of an extreme example, but there's definitely something in there where I might tell myself, oh, I'm a bit disappointed with myself there. I'm not as good as him. I'm not good enough, you know? So whereas on and on different day, and actually, so I'm saying this because this actually did happen to me just the other day. And what I've now that we're talking about it, I reflect on actually, I think I wasn't mentally in the best place on that day anyway, before I took myself to the golf course, which I think will affect me. But I think I'm guessing that if you just, again, if you reframe things from the get-go and say this, and I think this is what you're saying, is play your golf, right? Don't play someone else's golf. Like, you are the level that you're at today. You can't change that while you're out in the golf course. But what you can do is the way you talk to yourself. It's the things that you say to yourself. And yeah, that's what I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on. And, you know, I think it's natural. I think we will all find ourselves comparing ourselves to somebody with something, whether it be on the golf course, whether it, you know, be in life. But I think the only person you can compare yourself to is yourself, you know, yesterday, an hour ago, a minute ago, mm-hmm. you know, because that's how we can get better. I think if you're comparing your day one to somebody else's day 10,063, it's a very specific number, isn't it? Then, you know, it's not comparable. And that's why we have handicaps, you know. So if you're comparing your game to somebody with a much lower handicap, that didn't happen overnight. You know, they've been where you are. They've been on a journey. They may stand up to, you know, play with a better golfer and feel exactly the same, but get comfortable with the journey that you're on, with what your goals are for that day, with what success looks like for you. A really interesting example, this weekend, I played in a mixed event, and I was teeing off with the men. And I have never hit my driver as well as I did that day, Chris. It was, and I'm still smiling about it now. I'll remember that for a very, very long time. And I outdrove them by over 100 yards. This is no exaggeration. I think I hit one drive 20 yards short of a 348 yard par four. And it's just, wow. And it's interesting what they potentially would have been feeling in that moment, you know, without going into gender roles and all of that good stuff. But but I tell you what, Chris, you should have seen my chip in that day, because there was an opposite. And ultimately, you know, the scorecard doesn't tell you the journey on how you got there. And I think one person's strength on a certain day may well be another person's weakness. But there's so many elements to golf that, you know, it's very difficult to compare yourself to anybody else.
Yeah. Is there a particular golfing related memory that makes you really nostalgic and makes you feel warm and fuzzy when you think about it and remember it and talk about it?
Yeah, there is. There's a few. I'm trying to think which would be the best. I guess it was probably one of the last times I played when I was heavily pregnant. So I think I was, I don't know, 30 weeks maybe pregnant. So I was fairly large. It was a very ill-fitted polo shirt, put it that way. And I played I shot the best round I've ever shot. And that taught me a lot. That whole experience taught me a lot about the mental game, about golf, about how actually if you can take a feeling of pure gratitude, all right, something you are grateful for beyond anything that happens on that golf course, and you can take that feeling, it's very difficult to feel two emotions at the same time. So if you, I guess this is just a quick tip that's getting thrown in here, but if you are feeling angry or emotional or frustrated about a shot, if you have a go to what am I grateful for, and then you actually submerge yourself in that feeling of gratefulness for that thing, you will very quickly see that your frustration dissipates, right? Because it's very difficult to feel two emotions that may be impossible to feel two emotions at the same time. And with regards to that experience, I just remember on the 17th hole at Bondi. Bondi's a really tricky course. Anybody locally will know that it's got more trees than Sherwood Forest. And I just remember chipping through a Y-shaped tree. You know, there wasn't really a gap. I didn't even think twice about if it was the right option. It just felt right, and I just did it, and I executed for, yeah, as I say, it's a level par back nine, and it was, yeah, it's just an incredible experience.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that one. What about the Eagle Has Landed then? Was that it? Did you cover that off earlier, or is there another golf shot moment that lives proudly in the memory?
Oh, wow. I mean, because it's so recent, those drives will stay with me for a while, the ones that happened this weekend, absolutely. Because they came from a combination of hard work, keeping at it. It's been 2 years since I've hit the driver well, literally since giving birth, actually. I'm sure that my swing changed, or something obviously changed after giving birth. And I'm from some of the mums I've spoken to, this over-the-top driver swing seems to be relatively common after giving birth. So I don't know what's in that. I'll continue to research that. But yeah, I think just the amount of hard work it's taken to get to this point where the light bulb moment has happened. So the Eagle Has Landed, yeah, it probably is standing on the first tee, looking at the hole, 348 yards, feeling that bit of wind and just going, right, let's be having you, in a very Yorkshire way.
Yeah, let's be having you. Superb.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Genuinely, if you are researching that kind of formally or informally, this thing about what you're picking up from mothers about, yeah, but that kind of over the top swing, I'm very curious just about, is that with a sort of increasing sample size of people that you're talking to, is that a mental thing, or is it a physical thing, or is it a bit of both? I don't know. It's that's interesting. So finally then, cut it out. What grinds your gears in golf?
Gender-specific tees.
Okay, let's talk more about them.
The tee situation, because I think, and don't get me wrong, there are some really forward-thinking clubs at the moment, which is fantastic to see, that have graded their whites and their yellows and reds for both men and women. But, you know, personal experience of going around and playing different clubs and wanting to be sociable and wanting to see off the yellows or the whites, you know, and arguably being able to hit the distances required and shoot the scores off those tees, but not doing so because of potentially wanting to enter a card and that facility not being available to do anywhere from other than the reds. And I think not just obviously for myself and for women, you know, I think, you know, I've worked with and met a lot of golfers that are aging. You know, they're at a point now where they perhaps come to me to gain more distance off the tee, gain more flexibility, etc. But also from a perspective of their confidence off the tee, you know, from a physical and a mental perspective, and, you know, having to appreciate that, you know, dealing with those feelings of not being a long hitter and what that means. And rather than having tee boxes that are specific for that person's needs and allowing that to happen more. I guess we've made huge progress with it already. And I just hope that extra mile goes to the point where it becomes the norm.
Yeah. It's really interesting you're bringing this up. I do not envy the role of golf club managers in trying to run golf clubs and keep the politics in order and keep members happy and stuff, because for some of the reasons that you were just saying. But yeah, I mean, something I've noticed recently is that I think maybe, so a couple of approaches that seem to get taken with kind of like, let's call them, you know, gender agnostic or gender neutral tee boxes, is like maybe applying handicap ranges to them, for example, which just helps someone as a frame of reference say, if you I believe that you're at this certain level, then yeah, you know, you can play from wherever you want, but actually, you know, in the interest of your enjoyment, actually, and I'm speaking from some personal experience there as well, because like, yeah, I mean, I'm a mid-level handicap or whatever, and naturally moving back from the yellows to the whites is just noticeably harder. So it all depends as well, I guess, doesn't it, on like, why are you playing golf? What are you wanting to get out of it? So, yeah. Anyway,
absolutely,
we've come up the 18th fairway. I think we've putted out on the 18th green, and we're just about in the clubhouse now for a cup of tea or coffee and a nice bit of cake or something, I think. So just before we consume that, just humour me, Laura, just full of golf analogies.
Absolutely with you.
Anything you would like to share with the listener or anything else that's on your mind before we close this out?
I don't think so. It's been an absolute pleasure. I think there's just, people get to make choices, don't they? People get to make choices if they want to improve their golf, or and the way that they want to improve their golf and seek out opportunity. The same way in terms of, you know, our lives, you know, we can choose what perspective we have on things. It starts with awareness. Probably then comes change, and then it's just a choice of motivating ourselves to do it. I put a lot of content out there on Instagram, you know, into free content, free advice, free tips. If anybody's struggling with frustration, if anybody's stopped enjoying the game as much, or if anyone is looking for that next improvement and hasn't looked at the mental game, I'd absolutely advise just going over and having a look. And, you know, beyond that, you know, I offer free player consultations. I'm just in the process of now launching a program, a one-to-one program, which includes my full online course alongside, you know, the one-to-one tuition and coaching that people need. So, yeah, there's some really exciting stuff to come from me. And if you haven't tried it, if you haven't looked into the mental game in any way, shape or form, just give it a go. Because, you know, as Chris has said and as I say, it doesn't need to be woo-woo or fluffy or all of this holistic thinking and all of these words that you might term this, you know. So, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It can be quite direct. It can be really quite simple, and it can be very relatable. Whatever walk of life you are from, I would urge you to have a look.
Nice one. Thank you, Laura. Well, thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast, and we'll certainly be sharing all the, you know, the links to your Instagram and website and things like that, for example, in the show notes for our listeners to click on and go and take a look. And yeah, I mean, you've got some great content there, and thank you again, and take very good care of yourself.
Yeah, you too, Chris. Thanks ever so much.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Do remember to follow us on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to get in touch with me directly, you can email me. Email address is listed in the show notes. Or if you listen on Spotify, you can use the comments feature there to drop in a few words about what you liked about this episode and any feedback or ideas for future episodes. Until the next time, please always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.